This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We will welcome in two guests from different political perspectives to talk with you about the top state and national stories in politics this week, and we will invite your input and the issues in the news that you want us to talk about. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our two Week in Review guests. We have with us this week Keene Winters, who is a small business owner in Wausau, a member of the Wausau City Council, a frequent op-ed writer for the Wausau Daily Herald, and a member of the steering committee of the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau. Good morning.
Good morning, and welcome to Wausau.
Well, thank you very much for being with us. Christine Bremer-Moogley is an attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau, a representative of the Democratic National Committee, and a member of the Electoral College in 2008 and in 2012. Good morning.
Hi, Joy. Hello, Keene.
It's good to have you both with us. And I understand congratulations are in order, Christine. Your daughter was just recently married, so that's wonderful.
Right,
congratulations.
Yes. Thank you, Joy. I took a hiatus from your show so we could have a wedding up in Madeline Island, and it was unbelievably wonderful, and now I'm a free person.
That's wonderful, too. Yeah. And Keene, I'm imagining that your wife is busy preserving the summer produce, as I know the last time you came here, you presented us with some of her bounty.
Yes, we are in the middle of berry picking season. And I should also mention that it's beautiful weather up here in Wausau, and today is the start of the Bull Falls Blues Fest, and that'll continue on Saturday on Fern Island in the middle of the Wisconsin River here.
I think I might have to check that out. Thank you very much for mentioning that, too. All right, well, let's talk about politics. We'll start with the presidential race. Governor Walker is no longer the front runner in Iowa, according to multiple polls. Donald Trump is now in the lead. And even Ben Carson, Dr. Ben Carson, is ahead of Walker in the CNN poll. Walker says he's not too concerned because he says it's early and polls tend to change a lot. Keene, how concerned are you about Walker losing traction in Iowa?
Well, I think his head is in the right place, that he's not concerned. It is early. There are polls. And in fact, if I was his campaign manager, that's what I would say. You have a game plan. We're going to stick to the game plan, and this is early. And then I'd go in the other room and worry a little bit about the polls and in particular think about just what to do in the next debate that would help the candidate shine.
So, should the governor be worried, Christine?
Oh, yes, I think he should be worried. And, Keene, I'd have to say I don't think the governor's head has ever been in the right place. So I guess I would say that, he's dropping like a rock, and his debate performance, although very safe for him because he didn't, display any personality or any new ideas, really didn't impress the country, and so I think he should be worried about it, and I think that this is going to be a very interesting summer, the end of the summer, to watch what happens in the next debate, which is coming up, see if he does any better, but I think that people aren't really very impressed with what he has to say.
Yeah, well, why do you think, Keene, that Donald Trump is topping all the polls after all of these presumably controversial things he's been saying?
Well, I think people look for simple answers, and one of the things that I take out of the Trump phenomenon is in this country, I think we've really gone through a period where we have demonized and devalued our legislative branch. I think it happens all the time. And often a fight between the executive and the legislative branches is a real mismatch because the executive can stay on message and the legislature is mixed. And we should remember that the legislative branch is an important part of the checks and balances in American government. In fact, it was the major innovation of American government to check executive power. And I sort of worry that we're drifting back towards some desire to have a strong man or strong woman who's going to pound their fist and fix all the problems for us.
So why do you think Trump is on the top, Christine?
Just to respond to that briefly, I mean, if we look at our Wisconsin situation, we have a governor who totally controls our legislature, and we have no space between them. He gets whatever he wants, and it's resulted in a disastrous program for our state, and our state is suffering. The people of our state are suffering because of Walker and his close relationship with the legislature. So I think that in our case, in Wisconsin, it's well-deserved to think that the legislature isn't doing a great job when they do not provide any check and balance on what Walker's doing, almost nothing. And I think Trump is, you know, he's coming forward because he's entertaining. He's got key issues that on the economy and, you know, immigration and terrorism. He says things that appeal to angry people. And the angry people are the ones often who vote in these early primaries, and so they're polled and they enjoy it. I mean, I don't think there'd be any chance there'd be 24 million people watching those debates if it wasn't for Trump, because none of those other guys have anything interesting to say, in my humble opinion. But, you know, I think that he is he's entertaining, and I think the Republicans are right to worry about him. I mean, he's something that could really change the color of this race. The Republicans gave up and just ceded to the media a control of these debates. So now it's who knows what's going to happen in the next one. So I think we're going to get a big dose of Donald Trump, and I think people are going to see him for what he is.
Well,
I'll jump in and take issue with a couple of those things. I certainly the media has an appropriate role in debates. In fact, that's what we look for the fourth estate to be doing in a democracy, is running debates and being the neutral arbiter. And I thought the Fox folks were tough. They asked good questions, and I think, you know, it's a highly rated debate. It gave the people what they wanted. So that would be one thing I'd take issue with. And the second is, unless you've had your head under a rock, Christine, these strong legislative leaders have taken all sorts of exceptions with Governor Walker's budget, from funding the university to the level of debt for transportation. There's been multiple changes. So to characterize our legislature as just rolling over for the governor is a real misstatement of fact, and I think you're contributing to the problem of demonization of the legislature in this country.
Well, I think that they contributed to their own issue with demonization of themselves by their conduct. And I don't think cutting the budget from $300 million to $250 million is really giving the governor a big run for his money. I think that what they've done to education in this state, what they've done to women's health issues, what they've done to just to the people of our state with regard to transportation itself, not funding redoing our roads. You know, I'm up in Lac de Fombo right now, and, you know, our roads, it's like you live in a third world country. So, you know, they didn't do anything responsible, and then they vote for a Buck stadium. So, you know, I think the people of our state have pretty much had it with him. And, you know, with regard to the debates, I'd just like to respond. Fox News is the one that decided who gets on the stage for the big boy show. And for the younger program, for the other program, we called it the kiddies table, but it turned out 6 million people watched the early debate. So, you know, I think that there's no question but the media is controlling who's on the stage and how the debates are going to run.
Yeah, and we will get to some of those other issues that Christine brought up with the state legislature in a little bit later in the program. But let me ask you, Keen, if you think Donald Trump is here to stay, is he serious about this? And do you think he poses has a good chance of taking the whole shebang?
You know, it's certainly a possibility. I think people are yearning for simple answers. I think, you know, one of the things that might happen is Joe Biden would get in the race. And then I think if we had Donald Trump and Joe Biden, I think the debates would be on pay-per-view and probably sell well. But the question is that really healthy for our democracy? And I'm not sure it is.
Let's take a call from Dave in Madison. Hello, Dave.
Well, I'm not really sure that Donald Trump rising to the top of the polls in the Republican Party is any real surprise, since the Republican Party has been pandering to bigotry for decades. and they have a news organization, Fox News, that panders to it. So why is anyone surprised when a big blowhard like Donald Trump rises to the top of the Republican Party?
I didn't mean to cut you off in mid-word, but what's your response to that, Keene?
Well, I think it's much more nuanced than that. I think we're, you know, this notion that we have 17 candidates and, you know, it used to be either you were a national player and there were a few people who could do that. Now with an internet-based system, you know, really you can have a very small campaign with a very large reach, and so it's very fracturous. And you know, we really used to be very solidly a two-party country. Now I think it's more multipolar than that. And Donald Trump, by reputation, gets things done, and people want simple answers. They want to get things done, and I think that's not just Republicans. I'm sure that's many people in the Democratic and Independent camps as well.
Christine, what do you say about bigotry and Donald Trump's rise in the polls?
Well, you know, I think Dave is right about the pandering. It's unbelievable about how we see the pandering when we look at what Scott Walker has done with his flip-flops on issues, including ethanol in Iowa, and now what he's done with his issue on abortion and women's right to choose after we saw him have an ad in the Burke campaign where he said women should have the right to choose make their healthcare decisions with their physicians. I think that, you know, now we've got the director of communication for Koch Industries telling people not to placate him and hammer him and damage him so he cannot run as an independent. You know, I think that it's what's going to happen here is going to be very interesting. Rand Paul took after him yesterday. Interesting that Rand Paul, whose father ran as an independent, is going after Trump for this very issue. So I don't know. I think the Republicans have to really decide what they want to do. I mean, if he comes out on top, are they going to throw him over the bridge, or are they going to let him really run? Is he an empty threat or not? You know, I think he's not, and I think it'll be something to watch this. And as Stephen Colbert said, he prays every night and lights a candle that Donald Trump stays in the race. So, you know, as a Democrat, I guess I follow Colbert and I'd say, please stay in the race. This will make it very, very interesting for all of us, and we'll really see what his platform is all about and what the Republicans really stand for.
Christine Bremer-Moogley is an attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau, a representative to the Democratic National Committee, a member of the Electoral College in 2008 and 2012. Keene Winters is also with us, small business owner in Wausau, member of the Wausau City Council, a member of the steering committee of the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau, both with us to review the news of the week. And we welcome your input, too. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll talk more issues on the presidential campaign trail, including Governor Walker calling Hillary Clinton deceiver-in-chief, and much more coming up after this break. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Each week at this time, we welcome in two guests from different perspectives to talk about the top state and national stories in politics. Today we have with us Keene Winters and Christine Bremer-Moogley. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you would like to weigh in on some of these issues on the campaign trail, or if you have another issue in the news this week that you would like to introduce. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker says new revelations about Hillary Rodham Clinton's emails show she can't be trusted to be president. The Republican presidential candidate was asked Wednesday about Clinton's decision to turn over her personal email server to the Justice Department. Two emails that were in her personal system were designated as top secret and classified. Walker says it's about time she dealt with the consequences of this. He says Clinton would be a good deceiver in chief, but she cannot be trusted to be commander in chief. Christine, what's your response to that?
You know, it's very difficult for me to respond to that without screaming, because, you know, as I was thinking as I was researching this morning, that I try to be measured and neutral for your program, but I get worse when I read stuff. One of the things that I think is really important for people to remember is Scott Walker had a router in his office when he was Milwaukee County executive that was a few feet from his desk, where people were doing illegal things with regard to using county taxpayer money and for their payment when they were actually doing work to elect Scott Walker. I mean, this man to claim that Hillary Clinton, who turned over all her emails, did everything in keeping with the then-in-place rules of the State Department, National Archives, and the United States government, followed the same procedures that every other Secretary of State ever followed. When we find out that two emails out of thousands were marked classified after she received them, not when she received them, they were not marked top secret, as Dianne Feinstein has pointed out, and as the State Department has pointed out, they were not marked top secret when she had them. When we say two emails out of that would cause her to be criminalized, it's just a joke. I don't know if people remember, but I think we should go down memory lane, 2007, when President Bush lost millions, up to 5 million emails when he was in the White House. And these emails were emails on the White House server, and they were also emails that were used for the Republican National Committee when Karl Rove was there, and they lost them, and there was no, and they're just gone. They could not be retrieved. And that was millions while he was in the White House. So making a big deal out of two emails that were marked top secret after she received them, they were not when she had them or handled them, is just such a joke. And it just shows how desperate they are. He's trying to point the finger at someone else for something that he did when he was actually criminalized. I mean, what he did really was criminal, and people did get prosecuted for it. So this is just outrageous. And I think that when you look at the facts, and I would encourage people to look at the facts closely, then if you go on HillaryClinton.com, you'll see a full rendition of all of this. Then I think you'll come away understanding that this is really just another ruse of Scott Walker.
All right, Keene Winters.
Well, compliments to Christine for a spirited defense of the indefensible. Look, the Chinese or the Russians weren't trying to break into Scott Walker's campaign server. This was a matter of taking national security issues outside our normal protected system, and that's really very unconscionable. But I also will comment on this. I'll say that in terms of campaign strategy, the deceiver-in-chief comment, it made the headlines. It's going to stick. It's going to have an impression. The Clintons, on a regular basis, game the rules. Everybody knows that they've gotten filthy rich through peddling political influence, and it's going to be a problem for Hillary. And you better hope that Joe Biden gets in the race, or it's going to be finished.
Well, let's take Lawrence in Madison. Hi, Lawrence.
Hi, I have a question. I'm sorry, I don't know the name of the gentleman.
That's all right. Just go ahead with your question.
Okay. Well, I'd like to direct a question at him. Would you be willing, sir, publicly to, you know, ask of Scott Walker as a candidate whom you presumably support, sounds like you do, to say whether he himself knew definitively about the router in his office? He has not answered that question. It appears that he used it, but he will not answer the question. It's been put to him many times. Would you also ask him if he spoke truthfully to the citizens of Wisconsin when he said that he was not a target of the John Doe 1 investigation? And would you help to make sure that someone who is questioning the public integrity and personal character of someone running on the other side, would you perhaps reflect then on how this reflects on his own character?
All right, thanks, Lawrence. Keene Winters?
And the answer will be a definitive no, I would not ask those questions. I would not pile on with this campaign of innuendos. And if there are things that make Christine's blood boil, certainly the thing that makes my blood boil is this John Doe investigation. There were people right here in central Wisconsin who had their homes broken into in the morning by police, their families gathered into the living room, sat down, kids couldn't go to school, threatened with jail time if they told anyone about it, their computers seized. Ordinary people right here in central Wisconsin. As a defense attorney, Christine, you ought to be outraged at the way they carried out this John Doe investigation.
Well, I'm not a defense attorney, and I would absolutely disagree with everything you said just then. We have videotape showing that all of that is false with regard to how the police investigated this matter. So I think you shouldn't
only in
talk
one
about,
case a person exaggerated, but what happened here in central Wisconsin?
Exaggerated,
two people.
Okay, but let Keene finish one point, and then we'll let Christine respond.
Look, how would you feel if police came into your, you were engaged in normal free speech, political advocacy, and the police came into your house, made your kids stay home from school, rounded your family up, and then said to you, by God, if you say a word about this to anyone, you're going to jail. I can't believe that happens in America, but it happened here in Wisconsin, and we should all be outraged.
What about Keene, though, Governor Walker accusing Hillary Clinton of doing something wrong with personal email when he is thought to have used a secret email when he's county executive? What about that specific?
Well, look. You know, I'm a member city council, and I have a campaign fund, and I also have a city council email address. I have to make decisions every day about whether, when I'm sending something out, is it going to be considered campaigning, and I shouldn't use the city email address, or is it constituent service exclusively, and I should use my city email address, and so I have to make those decisions all the time. And so that's the way we work in this country. The campaign needs to be separate, and if you're an incumbent, you're going to have a separate place for the campaign and a separate place for your public. But I can't take my city emails offline to my own private server.
Christine.
Lawrence asked some very important questions, but I must say, Keene, your little decisions with regard to your work in Wausau are not anything close to what Governor Walker was dealing with when he was county executive and having a router in his county office, which was clearly illegal. I mean, either the question absolutely should be asked, Lawrence. He either was incompetent because he didn't know that 25 feet from his desk, his chief of staff was using something that was illegal and hiding it, which I doubt she was, or he's a liar. I mean, I have a small business and I have a staff. If one of my staff was doing something like that, I would know it immediately. I know when they have earbuds in, for goodness sakes. So, you know, a good leader of an office, which I'm sure he claims to be, would know that. And with regard to the other question that Lawrence wants asked, just whether he knew he was a target, I mean, there was a subpoena issued. And in the subpoena, it stated that there was an issue. It was stated that they believed they had probable cause that Scott Walker had committed a crime. You know, the people that have been involved in this were convicted. We have 6 convictions. So, you know, when he has the gall to say that Hillary Clinton, because 2 emails were reclassified after she received them to top secret, was in some way trying to compromise the national security of this country, it's outrageous. And so we have a man who led a bunch of people in his office who are all convicted of crimes, and has a router that's illegally in his office, and yet you try to compare that? This is just outrageous that he would even raise this. It just shows how false he is with regard to his leadership skills and his communication with people.
I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review. We are reviewing the top news stories of the week in politics with Christine Bremer-Moogley, who is an attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau, and Keene Winters, who is a small business owner in Wausau. And we are welcoming your input on the news of the week. You can weigh in on the issues of the week or bring up a topic you would like to have our guest discussed. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Hillary Clinton criticized the GOP field for not not mentioning one word during last week's debate about making college affordable. She is pitching a plan that centers on a $200 billion federal incentive system to encourage states to expand their investments in higher education and cut student costs. She also made the statement that Governor Walker seemed to, delight in cutting education in Wisconsin. Christine Bremer-Moogley, do you think Hillary Clinton has the right idea here?
Yes, I really do. I mean, when we look at $1.2 trillion in loan debt in our country, we talk about what's the future for young people. It is very bleak if our leaders don't take this problem and really work to solve it. I give her a lot of credit for putting a program on the table. You know, it's something that we can start a discussion around. When we look at what Walker's history is with regard to education, you know, he talks about tuition being frozen and that his tuition freezing is equal to what Secretary Clinton is saying concerning revamping student loan debt. It's not even close. First of all, the tuition freeze doesn't apply to everyone. It doesn't apply to out-of-state students or international students. The tuition might be frozen, but the cuts that University of Wisconsin is suffering is going to shift costs to families. I mean, right now, the university is paying less than it was in 2011. I mean, the state of Wisconsin is paying less than it was in 2011 for a share of a student's cost. So, you know, now in 2011, they were paying $4,700 per student. And now it's gone down by 34% to 34% of the total cost per student. So when we talk about the costs right now for students, you know, this is freezing tuition doesn't help if you have to go to college for 5 years because you can't get your classes because there aren't enough, seats and there aren't enough, classes offered so you can finish your major. So removing the faculty from tenure protections, having our faculty being fleeing the state because they don't know what's going to happen next and the state has now become hostile to our educators, you know, the cost that Scott Walker has caused University of Wisconsin is heartbreaking, and for him to even come forward and say anything about he's a good guy because he froze tuition is just a total complete joke. So yes, I think Secretary Clinton's idea about trying to help students with regard to loans is something that we should look at. It's going to be costly for our country, but no more costly than the billions of dollars that is lost to crony capitalism that we give away. So I think it's a good turn, and I hope that it gets a serious look.
Keen.
Well, I'd have to say it's a silly plan. What we need is an educational plan that helps students directly with the financing of their education. We can't keep pouring billions and billions into institutions, and then hopefully they will pick and choose the right people. We really need to make those things available to students directly. Now, I'm going to go back to this issue of the router. Christine, you're showing your technical ineptness. A router is something that is not sitting on somebody's desk. It's my router is 25 feet down the hall in a wire room. Now, because I'm a very small office and I run things myself, I know where my router is and I've hooked it up myself. But I would, a chief executive of an office is never going in the wire closet to look at the router or what's there. So why would he ever? And if he did, what the heck is he doing? That's not his job. So this notion that somehow there was this big router sitting out there that said, hi, I'm the campaign router on it, that he should notice, there's simply no proof that he did, and if he's poking around the wire room, I think he's in the wrong place.
Christine.
Joy, I have to respond to that. First of all, Keen, I think this program really prides itself on having people that keep the debate above personal insults, and I would appreciate it if you would do the same. First of all, with regard to this router, if you read anything about the program and what he had done in his office, she had the router in the credenza in her office behind some doors, which were sometimes closed and sometimes not. So it was something that the evidence was clear could have been seen if he had looked at it. And I would appreciate it if you would keep from ad hominem attacks.
Well, Christine, you did start it by saying, saying today that your little worries about city council emails and trivializing that, I think that opened the things up a little bit. But I'll agree, if you'll agree, to stay away from that.
All right, let's both stay away from it. All of us stay away from it. Let's talk about... Let's talk about another issue in the news, and that being, this is the education issue still. Scott Walker tweeted in response to Hillary Clinton's comments that he froze in-state tuition rates for 4 years while Clinton charged public universities $225,000 for speaking fees. So, Keene, you want to address that response?
You know, we can go on these little tit-for-tat things. I think we need to get a good educational policy in place that really provides direct aid to students and stops providing vast amounts of money into these institutions where it's amorphized and we don't know where it's going to, and not necessarily directly helping students.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about,
Could I just talk about it a little bit? I think that what we're talking about here is funding students so they can graduate without loans. I mean, the Clinton program gives grants to states so students can graduate without loans. And it also gives more grants to institutions if they increase graduation rates, which directly affects students. And it's meant to help low-income students and first-year graduate students to graduate, and first-generation students to graduate. And it also helps students who join AmeriCorps, and they earn tuition assistance. So there's many things in this program. But the most important thing is it allows students to graduate without loans so they aren't stymied the rest of their lives with a huge debt. So I think it does directly help students, Keene. And I think that a good look should be taken to this program, and we should all start thinking about what we can do to end this loan debacle we've got in our country.
When we come back from break, we will talk about a proposal to merge the University of Wisconsin's two-year colleges with the state's technical college districts. Does this make sense? What's behind this? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with two guests from different perspectives about the top state and national news stories of the week. Our guests are Keene Winters, a small business owner in Wausau, a member of the Wausau City Council, a member of the steering committee of the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau, and Christine Bremer-Moogley, an attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau, a representative to the Democratic National Committee, and was a member of the Electoral College in 2008 and 2012. So five Republican lawmakers met this week in private to discuss a proposal to merge the Wisconsin Technical College system with the University of Wisconsin's two-year colleges. Keene Winters, what do you think of this idea to possibly merge these two systems?
I'm not sure it's helpful for us up here in Wausau. It depends on what you want your system to do. Up here, we really value the tech and the two-year campus as being very community-oriented, and really, particularly the technical college, to train students for jobs that are in the local area. One of the things that's happening right now within the university system is that the two-year campus in Wausau, the two-year campus in Marshfield, the two-year campus in Rice Lake and the two-year campus in Menominee are being merged into one dean, and I think we're going to miss, and I understand this urge to sort of cut the administrative portion, but then the question is if there's one dean who's going from Rice Lake to Marinette, to Marinette, to what? I mean, it's hard to see that they'd even be in the community in one day, or that the communities necessarily have the same kind of interest. And so the question is do we want our college system to be tethered to the local global economy, or do we want it to be one massive system? And I think if we start that consolidation, then we might as well also consolidate campuses, because that's the next route. And then we really don't have a system like we have today.
Yeah, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says that State Representative Dave Murphy came to him and proposed taking a closer look at ways to find efficiencies and ways to coordinate services to better serve students. Christine, is there any harm in looking into this idea?
Well, I think that the harm is that it's five legislators behind closed doors with likely no real background in administration of universities. And so I think it is, and who knows what help they're getting from any experts, if any. So I think it is very troubling. If they're going to have this discussion, let's have it throughout the state with meetings and hearings, and let people testify and let people understand and let the legislators learn something about the system before they think they want to take another pen. You know, they've cut $5.1 million from the college's budget. And as Keene very aptly stated, we're going to a regionalized system now with one dean. And if you look at the size of the northwest portion of our state, our poor dean, who is just phenomenal, Keith Montgomery, Dr. Keith Montgomery, will have to travel, you know, constantly. Right now, we have the benefit of Dr. Montgomery being in many community projects, and we see him all the time. I'm sure you see him, Keene, in your meeting. He's very much a part of our community, and I don't know how he possibly can be a part of four communities. And if we try to do this and change and put together two systems that are totally different, the UW colleges system is a gateway for four-year university. That's the goal, and that's the mission. The mission of the technical colleges is to serve not only young students but also adults who, on a much more short-term basis, to ready them for jobs in the economy. So these are two different systems with two totally different missions. And so if we look at what's going to happen here in terms of savings, really what we're looking at is more cuts. I see this as the nail in the coffin to the university system. You know, as it is right now for the colleges, you have to understand that $5.1 million, 90% of the budget of the University of Wisconsin College System is personnel. So jobs are just going by the wayside. So all these jobs are going to be gone. The mission is going to be challenged, so students won't have the same services. And to now, instead of letting the university kind of figure this out, what just has happened to them with regard to the $250 million cut, they're talking about doing some more work on the university system. You know, the university is the pride of our state. And for them to be dealing with it in this way is just devastating. And they should stop, take a break, figure out how bad the damage already is before they do anything else.
Let's take some calls on this. John in Madison is with us. Hi, John.
Hi.
Yes, what do you think about this?
Well, so I'm 21. My main concern with it, I guess, is looking at, you know, the growth in administration in terms of vertical height and how hard it is for students to be able to make changes in their university if there's a problem. And when you sort of consolidate all of these different, you know, different, like the previous lady who was talking brought up a great point about how, you know, there are two fundamentally different missions in terms of what you want to do with these different universities and then technical schools and whatnot. And what happens when they start implementing things to everywhere that students on one campus, you know, they don't get their voice heard and they can't make changes.
Yeah, thanks very much, John. So, Keene, two very different missions for these is what you know, John and Christine are saying, and that this merger is not going to help that.
Well, I agree. The missions is part of, look, every organization should seek to be more efficient, and in the search for cost controls is something that we should always undertake. But I think the issue is we could do this, but it's going to change the mission of the institution. And the question is do we want those missions changed? And I'm not sure that we do.
Let's go to David in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, David.
Hello. Yeah, I just wanted to mention that I attended UW Richland Center. I graduated from there. I grew up in the inner city of Milwaukee, and I didn't have really strong skills. But I went to Richmond Center, had my best teachers. They really focus on academics because they're not forced to, you know, publish in their field. So they're really dedicated instructors. And, you know, Richmond Center is a small town. It's only 5,000 people. And, you know, it is, again, like a center of the community, just like our K-12 schools are. And I also want to say that I don't trust anything that comes out of state Republicans as far as education goes, because there's always this push to privatize. And I'll bet you any money, if these schools were consolidated and UW-Richland Center disappeared, to have a Globe pop up. And the universities like Globe, they're responsible for the greatest percentage of default of student loans in our country, because they don't provide a very good education, and they're way too expensive, and their instructors aren't as good.
Thank you, David. Are you concerned about privatization occurring, Christine?
Oh, absolutely. Not only privatization, but consolidation. I mean, all of a sudden, we're going to see these campuses go away. I mean, first of all, UW campuses, we have four in our region. All of a sudden, it will be two. Likely, UW Superior will be at risk. They'll start looking at, they'll have to close universities because they don't have the money to pay the faculty and we can't attract faculty. And as our faculty exit the state, which is happening on a daily basis, they're being picked off by other university systems, like a university in Minnesota. Our system will get less and less strong. So, I'm worried, very worried. Look what happened with the voucher school program and how it's being expanded. So I think that David has an absolutely perfect point, that this is something we have to be worried about. This is a slippery slope, and it seems like the University of Wisconsin is taking the hit for Scott Walker's budget mistakes, and it's really tragic.
We will, by the way, be talking more about this issue on our State Capitol Report Monday from 7 until 8. We'll have with us Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Assembly Minority Leader Katrina Shankland of Stevens Point. So we'll talk more on this issue on our State Capitol Report. And our lines are filled with people who want to talk about this issue, so it's a hot button. Let's talk about a couple of other things very briefly before it's time for our quiz. Governor Walker isn't saying whether he supports the bill that's in the state legislature that would ban research involving aborted fetal body parts. Keen Winters, do you have a quick comments on whether the state legislature should pass this bill and the governor should sign it?
Look, I think we murder too many babies in this country, and that's a problem. But I don't think the research institutions ought to pay the price for that. And so I don't think this bill addresses the core problem, and I'd rather not see it passed.
All right. Christine?
Well, I don't think we should talk about murdering babies, because that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about women ending pregnancies when they cannot go forward with them. And I think that even the responsible legislators like Alberta Darling see that the research that has been done in the University of Wisconsin, we should be so proud of, is going to be greatly jeopardized if this bill goes through by criminalizing the conduct of our researchers. So, you know, the issue of researching cures for diabetes and birth defects and cancer and Parkinson's and Lou Gehrig's, all these things happen now at the University of Wisconsin. And if this bill goes through, those researchers will leave and the work will not be done. This bill has no business going forward. Scott Walker says he's not saying if he's going to sign it. We heard Scott Walker in the debate say that there should be no exception for abortion, even the health of the mother. This bill, if it gets to Scott Walker's desk, will be signed. We know that he doesn't tell us the truth when he's going to do something like this. Remember right to work, folks? So, you know, I think that if he gets it on his desk, he'll certainly sign it, and it would be a tragedy for our state.
Governor Walker did sign the public financing bill for the Milwaukee Bucks Arena this week. Christine, very, very briefly, are you happy or upset that your taxpayer dollars will be going toward this facility?
Well, you know, a lot of my friends in Milwaukee won't like me to say this, but I really don't go to Bucks games. And even if I did, a $250 million switch to the University of Wisconsin for me is a no-brainer. I don't think this was a good investment for our state. If the governor had done some research on the economics of this, he wouldn't have signed it. If he really is a believer in market and letting the market decide, he would have let these billionaire owners take their chances on building their own arena rather than making us pay for it.
And Keen, what do you think of this? Are you glad or not?
Well, I think it's something that has bipartisan support. We can debate the value of professional sports or university sports all day long. The economics are probably a wash, but it is something that we do for reputation and quality of life, and those are intangible things, and you did have strong bipartisan support for this. Again, I don't go to a lot of Bucks games like Christine. It's too far away, but I think having major sports teams in our state, just like having major sports teams in our university, is something that we do in our society that helps us enhance reputation and quality of life.
All right, it's time for our weekend review quiz. What kind of food did astronauts aboard the International Space Station enjoy this week thanks to a Madison-based company? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. If you think you know the answer, give us a call. We will ask you to guess on air. If you are correct, we will send you an iHeart WPR magnet. So astronauts aboard the International Space Station had a tasty first this week. They have a Madison company to thank for it. What kind of space-grown food did they enjoy? 1-800-642-1234. All right, let's go to Tracy in Green Bay. What kind of food did astronauts enjoy thanks to a Madison-based company? Oh, we lost Tracy all of a sudden. That's too bad. Let's try Catherine in Madison. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. I think they ate lettuce, romaine lettuce.
You are correct, Catherine. That is right. After the astronauts lifted their red romaine lettuce leaves and had a toast, they gave it a whirl.
That's awesome. Good. Tastes good. Yeah. I like that. Kind of like arugula. Yeah. It's fresh.
The climate-controlled greenhouse the lettuce was grown in was developed by the Madison company, Orbitech. It's been there for more than a year after undergoing preparations for more than a decade. The first crop had to be sent back to Earth so it could be tested for bacteria and other contaminants, but it passed with flying colors. NASA says the ability for astronauts to grow their own food is very significant. So, again, we will send you, Catherine, an iHeart WPR magnet for your correct answer for the quiz. So, Keen, you can get lettuce in space now. What kind of food do you think NASA should grow there next?
Oh, I think we should go for some cranberry juice, some hydroponic cranberry.
That's very creative. Christine, how about you?
Well, you know, I just am thinking of a nice big marsh up in space. I think that's a great idea. We're from central Wisconsin. We like cranberries up here.
That's right. And it's a big Wisconsin crop. So thank you both very much for being with us, Keen Winters and Christine Bremer-Moogley. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing and directing this program. Thanks to Elizabeth Deliquest for on-air production. And thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. We will, by the way, on our State Capitol Report, talk more about the proposal to at least study the merger of the Wisconsin Technical School System in Wisconsin with the state's UW two-year colleges. So that will be our State Capitol Report on Monday from 7 until 8. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. ¶¶